if there's content that's borderline, that's content that we basically will not.
There is no second best. There's no second best crypto asset.
I respect you, and I have a great deal of appreciation to you, Jaya.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to JFG Tonight, the most punctual podcaster in the game, says Ked's dad. I was arguing with Majnoon Vids on the regular chat before the show began. He says, don't blame the boomers, don't blame the boomers. Look, it's very hard. It's very hard to not notice the fact that society was on solid ground before the boomers, and it looks like it's even recovering after the boomers, but the boomers were definitely a bump in the road. And he brings all these points saying, is it all boomers? Is it just because something happened while they were alive that you have to blame them all? Cut off this bullshit with the collective guilt. Leftist, oh, you can't say all. No, I can recognize patterns. I can do statistics. I can understand that maybe it's 99% of the boomers that were a problem. Maybe not 100%. But the boomers have been letting their guards down on being parasitized by bad IDs. And they totally bought into it. They were brainwashed to an extent that is irrecoverable. There's nothing you can do. And down to people who don't even technically qualify as boomer, like Tucker Carlson and even Matt Walsh to an extent, which we'll talk about today. Because as they realize the reality of the attack on Western civilization 10 years later than we did, there's nothing they have to suggest as a solution. It's fascinating, this interview of Matt Walsh by Tucker Carlson, because it's like, oh, okay, you got to JF 2016 now. Congratulations. You understand that white people are under attack. You understand that the demographic game is being pulled against us. You don't see a path to fixing that in a short-term way. And when you think about the solutions, you're still stuck in JF 2015, JF 2016, observing the situation. But like, what are we going to do? Well, why don't you talk to people who have been thinking about this for decades? Because the solution, you won't like it, but there are solutions, and it involves reconcentration. It involves acknowledging that the Equatorial Heights are not places where majorities of white people will survive ever. Ever. It's not going to happen. You can maintain the state artificially through legalities, border enforcement, and preferential colonialism of various sorts, but it's not going to be sustainable over a long period of time. Just too much sun. Majnoon Vid says, you use the term boomers, then complain at me for pointing out that the term boomers refers to an entire generation. That was the whole point of our interaction. It's obvious subversion. Now, you are obvious subversion, Majnoon Vid. When I say the boomers have committed mistakes, the boomers have abandoned their duty to their own people. The boomers have been brainwashed by bad cultural memes that led to our own destruction. When I say that, does that mean all boomers? No, but it doesn't change a thing. It doesn't change a thing whether it's 90% of the boomers, 99% of the boomers. Have you ever spoken to a boomer? It's like, it doesn't enter their brain. You can literally tell them, hey, you're being genocided. It's like zombies. It's like fish in an aquarium. Majnoon Vid says, when you say boomers, do you refer to... shut the fuck up, okay? This is such a loss of time. Fuck off! Yesterday, I was on Dangerous Liberty. This was an interesting discussion. Very interesting, guys. So you have the guy from Phoenix Ammunition, Justin, who is... this guy is promoting... Basically, he has a kind of self-made... full manufacturer for bullets, and he's a heavily promoted on Twitter. He constantly throws insults at everyone on Twitter, leftist, you know, he picks fight up, and that's kind of his way to promote his channel, and I love it. I love the idea that there's this guy who's fascinated by the engineering of it, and he has a whole manufacturer for bullet, the kind of bullets that everyday people use in hunting and self-defense. So no military grade, but all of the staples, the staples of bullets. So Phoenix Ammunition guy, very cool. Now these two guys, they are different than me, you know. I was commenting on his ears because I recognized the jujitsu ears before the show. I said, oh, you're doing the jujitsu. And they were both getting excited at talking about wrestling and jujitsu. And it's fascinating because these guys are in shape. I'm the geekest of the geekest. It's like, yeah, I love jujitsu. I love watching jujitsu. But no, I don't practice jujitsu. It was a fun mix. And I love also that The people who are obsessed about me and Mama JF, that kind of stuff, they're going down. Slowly they're going down because they are less and less... It's more and more weird, and it's more and more niche. So back 1 year ago, 1 year and a half ago, they would come on the chat and they would spam questions. Now it's like one or two people. And the guy was reading their super chats and he was like, what are they talking about? And I explained my story quickly. I think the world is healing in some way. And that is reassuring. Tonight, I don't have much to say. We will just be commenting on two important interviews, the Richard Spencer and Nick Fuentes interview. And then the... the Tucker Carlson Matt Walsh interview. Saint Phineas says, did you see my chats during that stream? I was going one half. Okay, I read all chats, but I don't specifically remember what you're referring to. Anon says, it was definitely amplified with bots. Yeah, it's so sad to see the directions that society can take. And tomorrow I have to be on the Bryce. What is this? When is this happening? Not sure I have the time right. Where will I be tomorrow? Bryce TRP interview. I'm trying to find the guy and his messages. Maybe in my DMs. Bryce. Bryce. Was it on Discord? I need to determine because my mind won't be free until I determine tomorrow at what time do I have to show up for this. I reviewed the audiobook of TRP. I would like to... Okay, so it's going to be at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. 8 p.m. Eastern Time tomorrow, we'll be talking about the revolutionary phenotype. Marby Dog says, Tucker Walsh interview was a bit frustrating. Absolutely. This is exactly how I felt because, okay, it's like you got all of the right diagnosis now. Now you're at Papa JF 2016. Now what? And it's like, I don't know what to do about this. I would hate to have to think about myself as white. Really? That's your response? Like, seriously, these guys can say it one sentence to the next. Yeah, I'm recognizing that white people are under attack. Oh yeah, the white people are being subjected to a genocide. But I would hate to have to think of myself as white. What the fuck is this? Like, it's like a people that was meant to die. A people that was that was incapable of reaching out for the olive branch of survival. Of saying, yeah, no, I deserve to exist. I want to exist. They're incapable of saying it. So what do we do with this? Well, this makes you realize that in the whole process, in the next 100 years, as the south of the US gets more and more populated by non-whites, to the point of 0% white, there's always going to be one less white. There's going to be one less white town, one less white family, one less white man. And they're always going to say, well, you know, I look around, but I would hate to think of myself as white. And this is just going to be it. We're just going to have to stop listening to these people. We're just going to have to say, all right, well, tell us when you're ready for a plane ticket. Sadie Edward says, Jeff, which Christmas appearances will you be making on fellow streamers? Well, I am still working on setting a date with Nick, and I will be on the Millennial, and then tomorrow I will be on Bryce, which is a smaller account, but it will be a Twitter space at 8 p.m. Eastern time. Saint Phineas says, I don't know what's wrong with Tucker, but he cannot be consistent. Exactly. This is a problem because we are elevating people who are deeply flawed in either their moral reactions. And I know it's not in the heart of Tucker. I'm sure both Matt Walsh and Tucker are good-hearted people, but it's not enough. The boomers were also good-hearted. They got deceived by all sorts of things. They couldn't see the future far enough. And we have to fix this. We have to have a discussion about what went wrong and how do we even keep some degree of survival for ourselves. Ked's Dad says, I hypocrite tomorrow. I told him I would be there. I hypocrite. At what time is that? Between 2 p.m. and 6 p.m. PST. That's so 5 to 9 Eastern time. So to try to overlap with the Bryce interview, perhaps what I should do is I'll go to iHypocrite tomorrow at 8 p.m. Eastern time, and then I'll jump to Bryce at 9. So let me put it on the calendar. 7 p.m. Eastern time, I hypocrite. And 8 p.m. Eastern time, Bryce. All right, so that's because I was starting to be worried. I had some baking plans for tomorrow. Right now, I'm working for my book, White People Food, and I have burger buns inflating right now. I'm trying a new recipe that was inspired by one of our audience member who wrote to me. He was working on a pork rind waffle, and the goal, it's a eggs based waffle that's aimed to become a burger bun. It's like waffle burger bun made of pork rinds and egg, and I found the idea fascinating. I might include his recipe in the book, but I also wanted to develop a pork rind flour burger bun. So we're talking here about deep fried lines of pork belly. Okay. Now they become crispy. now you reduce them into a powder, and there are big crisps and small crisps in the powder. You use that as part of your flour for the burger bun. So the burger bun is filled with meaty pork belly taste. It's like wicked alchemy what's happening in my kitchen right now. So this is my first try. And they are currently inflating, so I'm going to go check after the show and I might throw them in the oven. I mean, it is fascinating to see because you can see the little bits of pork belly, of dried pork belly coming out of the buns, of the surface of the bun. And I'm like, ooh, this is going to be beautiful. Now, because I'm trying to lose weight and be on a diet, I'm not eating these things, but I'm going to eat one single bite to determine if the taste is proper. I'm going to equilibrate the recipe, and hopefully that will be a supplementary page in white people food. Sadie Edwards says, "You had me at crispy pork bun." I mean, the idea just sounds good, you have to admit. My whole interactions of the last few days, including, you know, Jan Carroll not even engaging with my arguments. It's like bullet deflection is a reality in ballistics. It is part of the literature. It's actually the most common outcome. Bullet deflection, yes. That is why exit wounds, by the way, are bigger than entry wounds. What's the difference between an entry wound and an exit wound? Why are exit wounds always bigger? It's because bullets almost always stumble. And so that's my argument for the Charlie Kirk stuff. And Jan Carroll dismisses it. Oh, the French guy. You believe the French guy? So all that Jan Carroll is interested in is ankle biting Nick Fuentes. He's not interested in arguing with the science. He just cherry picks and accept the science that's in line with his interest. But that is the definition of cherry picking. And it's a fallacy. And it's an improper methodology. Bro, we are stuck in the nightmare of retardation. And when I see all these people coming at me and saying, "Oh, do you have an experiment?" It's like, bro, I have the totality of the scientific literature on the subject, which contains so many experiments you couldn't even conceive. And they talk about bullet tumbling. And I have the models. And I have the hunter stories. All of this is experiments. Oh, but did you shoot the roast yourself? And what I realized is that you can deceive yourself more with an experiment. You know, there's this false conception that if an experiment is bad, the worst thing that can happen is you won't find the truth. No, no. If an experiment is bad, the worst thing that can happen is you're going to start believing something that is bad, that is untrue. And your entire model of the world, as a consequence, it will move from reality or an approximation of reality to poof, something else. And that something else is like, oh, there was a trap door below, or oh, there was a shooter in the crowd, palm pistol, this guy behaves weirdly. And so, new rule of science for the modern world: an experiment with a flaw can deceive you more than no experiment at all. And I believe that the next 100 years, as science slowly moves to nothingness, as the academia completely abandons the pursuit of the truth, I believe we're going to see more and more of that. Just outright lie through fake experimentation. Taking pork hocks and showing, oh, not only can I blow the pork hocks, I can also blow the concrete block behind it. Without taking into consideration first that pork hocks are loose material opened on both sides. Charlie Kirk wasn't opened on both sides. Charlie Kirk was a full being wrapped in skin. And the shooting angle, very important factor. Tyler Robinson was elevated. I have seen the Richard Spencer interview of Nick Fuentes. Very nice interview. I highly recommend that people go watch it. What do we have here? It's a subtle interview that bounces on everything from geopolitics to the situation of white people, and also to the kind of detachment that is happening between both Richard and Nick to an extent, from another branch of kind of white separatism, of truly hard white nationalism and simply the desire of being only white among themselves, which is basically expressed in something like RTTL. And we have also kind of an abandonment and a message from Nick, and not something I'm blaming him for, but I've been warning you guys for a long time about this. Nick is a cosmopolitan, ultimately, person willing to live in a cosmopolitan, multiracial society. That is who he is. And he recognizes, and at times he sounds like those leftists that are bragging about the advantages of diversity and all throughout this interview, because he's basically proposing a history of the U.S. as a constant flow of immigration waves. And so be it. You know, it's one way you can view the history of the U.S. I'm not saying he's wrong, but I'm saying to anyone who would think that Nick Fuentes is a race radical, there you go. You have it expressed very clearly that he's not. And it's fine, because I've always said it, he's a Chicagoan for real. You know, he didn't end up in Chicago randomly. He's there, and he's been there forever, and he's integrated. His view of America is yes, you know, suburbs populated by whites, but it is not one where it's white everywhere. Marby Dog says, JF, do you see Spencer as a socially liberal outside of the race question? Absolutely. I would say he has many of the features of the liberal mind. First, this whole taste for artistry, very liberal. I would say that he's also from a perspective of imperial domination. Although the liberals don't speak like him, they ultimately converge when you see a question like Ukraine, when you see questions around the European Union. Ultimately, Richard Spencer is not against the bureaucracy, and he's not against the imperialism either, in principle, although he may take issue with one particular aspect of imperialism here and there, but he's not fundamentally, he's not like me, where I hate imperialism. So very interesting interview, and kind of an abandonment on the immigration question, a recognition that it's a little bit of follow-up of a comment that was already made by Nick a few weeks ago, that basically the immigration battle has already been lost, and we can try to improve it. We can try to limit the damage, but it's been lost, in the sense that the demographics of the U.S. have been changed forever in an unfixable way. And there's a little bit of a continuation of this mood in this interview. So very interesting overall. I don't have much commentary or disagreements. I I share the diagnosis. I personally have taken a route of being more of an isolationist. And they seem, the duo between Richard and Nick, being both kind of cosmopolitan to an extent, they both seem to have a difficulty understanding the RTTL view. And I wouldn't say it's an interview that criticizes RTTL, but it's kind of dismissing it in a way. And I'm more on the side of some degree of isolationist behavior. And the way I see it is, down the line, if what Tucker Carlson and Matt Walsh have been so clearly describing is an attack on white people, down the line, there will be a circle. There will be a nucleus of resistance of white people that will still exist. RTTL is return to the land, go away. It's the Aravol project. And my goal would simply be that when that happens, when there's a nucleus of still existing white societies that have made it through the next 100 years, my goal would simply be that my descendants are somewhere there. And I think that what we need to build is basically a Sweden of North America. So we don't have to do it explicitly, but my view is it's going to be Norton, and it's going to, we have to create a situation like Sweden, where it's a hard to reach continent. Let's have a look at friend of Gandalf.
I know you're passionate about dispelling the idea of group selection. Towards your argument, modern-day whites cheerlead their own extinction, while privately hoping to be one of the whites who will be spared. Self-preservation at expense of the group.
Yeah. But but there's no such thing as the group. From an evolutionary perspective. So it's like, yeah. Some people are not pre-evolved to handle the level of propaganda that was applied to Western civilization. And as a result, they die. They disappear or they are moved away. Oh, I sneezed. So it's like, the group analysis is always irrelevant in evolutionary theory, other than as an ecological niche. So yeah, the group that's around you, it creates a circumstance of living in which your genes are selected. Those circumstances of living, they're like the environment. So they matter to evolution, but they don't matter in the way group selectionists believe. Let me clear up my nose here. Marby Dog says, white self-extinction is purely a product of Frankish infiltration of academia and government bureaucracy. Partly. There are other factors that had to be there. White people had to be particularly victimizable through IDs, through contagious IDs, and they had to be gullible enough. Try a Frankish infiltration try a Frankish infiltration and government bureaucracy takeover of Botswana. Try promoting Made in Botswana. Try promoting abortion rights in Botswana. See, there are other people that inherently, in the way they are ready to handle hostile propaganda. And that may involve just not being even able to understand the propaganda. Like, what a blessing is it if you're so stupid that you can't use the birth pill? What a beautiful blessing. Like, it's a protection. You are protected. If you can find a way to be protected against the birth pill by being just stupid enough not to be able to read the instructions on the pamphlet, then you're good. You're going to have a good life. Majnun Vid says, JF's idea is that we aren't able to hold fertile lands, but we will be clever enough to hold infertile frozen wastelands. His mistake is to generalize his parasitic lifestyle into a political position. My parasitic lifestyle? I'm in Canada, and I have never depended on state welfare. Even at times when I didn't have jobs, in between jobs, I was using my savings from the last job to jump to the next job. That is the contrary of parasitism. I could very, especially as a single dad, I could very well go to the government right now. And if I went there every month and saying, I'm poor, I don't have money, they would pay me my functional life. So no, I'm not parasitic. I am looking at an edge from nature, and I am recognizing that white people have been existing in winter climates. So that's what they are fit. That's where they are fit to exist. That's where they will exist in the future. The USA experiment, if you will, was just an experiment for a short time. And yes, it's absolutely possible to produce major amounts of foods in what you call winter wastelands. By the way, I live in a winter wasteland. If I go out to go drop my trash bag into my trash can outside, I have to walk in snow. I have to walk in that high amount of snow. Is that a winter wasteland to you? Because when the spring comes, we can plant vegetables. And while I live in this place, I can have all sorts of vegetables on my counter that come from my neighbor who are cultivating a great garden. Winter wastelands, I think you just don't know what they are. It's not wasteland. There's no such thing as a wasteland, except if you get to Antarctica, maybe. But the north of Canada, absolutely fine. We have Trump here announcing earth ground strikes in Venezuela.
But 96% of the drugs coming in by water, every one of those boats you see get shot down. You just saved 25,000 American lives. But we knocked out 96% of the drugs coming in by water. And now we're starting by land. And by land is a lot easier. And that's going to start happening. And we're not going to have people destroying our youth, destroying our families either. But 96%.
Is that really for drugs? Something tells me our harassment of Venezuela is not for drugs. Something tells me it's about imperial control, markets, oil. Something tells me Trump is doing the whole imperial attacks onto countries that are not kneeling hard enough to the imperial power of the US. And that's worrying. I wouldn't mind that much if it's technical strikes against specific drug producers that actually hurt people. But something tells me it's not this. Because the war on drug narrative, that has been used again and again to basically justify external intervention. Yeah, the Monroe Doctrine, Marby Dog, absolutely. Here we have a denunciation of Candace. Finally, a Matt Walsh, who has been kind of stepping on eggs on this subject. Matt Walsh is now taking position that can, now it's a limited position. He's saying Candace should stop attacking Erica Kirk.
And it was clear to me then, and has become all the more clear to me since, as I've gotten to know her more, that this is somebody with an immense amount of strength and courage. So when people look at Erica and say, she's acting strange, I've never seen a grieving person act this way. Well, I agree. She's an exceptional person in an extraordinary situation, handling it with remarkable poise and dignity. That is a virtue. And virtue is a strange thing in our day. And even if she were not an impressive person, she would still be a grieving widow. She would still be my friend's wife. And I would still feel duty-bound to support her, as I have over these past 3 months in ways both public and not. So what I am asking everybody, including Candace, is to please leave this woman alone. Let her grieve. Let her pick up the pieces of her shattered life in whatever way she sees fit. She deserves that grace. And we owe it to her, not because of any specific debt, not because we have no right to question her. Of course, we do have the right. But we have a moral obligation as children of our Heavenly Father to be charitable and kind towards suffering widows, especially the widow of a man that all of us on the right say that we respected and admired. All told, the tragic reality is that 3 months after the assassination of Charlie Kirk, the leftists who want us dead are more emboldened than ever. They are thrilled. And that was always the worst possible outcome. It's a trajectory that, if it continues, could destroy not only what Charlie built, but also what's left of the conservative movement, a movement that is the only thing standing between Western civilization and the forces that wish to tear it down brick by brick. That's the reason sociopaths like Tyler Robinson are smiling right now. They know they're winning, and we cannot let them, which means we all must return to the facts, to the truth, and our defense of it, which is the mission that Charlie lived for and died for. We cannot let it die with him.
All right, so an appeal to what? Continue your search for the truth, but be kind to Erica. But I think Candace has been generally kind to Erica. I haven't watched all shows. Maybe I missed some that were particularly nasty. I don't know. I think that Erica, if anything, has always been very spared by Candace in a way, because Candace is going hard on TPUSA and turning the eyes and attention of people on certain figures like Andrew Colvett and others. But I haven't seen her go super hard on Erica. She has highlighted at times, okay, well, there's a correlation between these Egyptian planes and Erica's location. Saint Phineas says, what is JF? Is he French or German? No, I think JF has some German, but was raised in French culture. No, my genes are the vast majority French, genetically. And then there's a something like 17% Portuguese, North Portugal. And then there's some persons of Scandinavian and British Irish. However, a lot of these things varied as 23andMe developed more and more fine analysis. At the beginning, the day I did the test, I think I was 40% British Irish and mostly French then. But eventually they discovered that a lot of these genes actually belong in France. So now I'm evaluated at a very high percentage, just French. And French, Southern, and a little bit Northern, but mostly Southern France. Marby Dog. Oh, yeah, okay. Rodina says they chose the wrong victim. Charlie was the nicest of them all. If it had been Ben Shapiro instead on that stage, people would not be saying such nice things as they are about Charlie. It's an interesting historical fiction to wonder, what if it hadn't been Charlie? What if it had been someone else? But you're right, that Charlie had a very special kind of darling relationship with America, where you had to really be, you had to be in the spheres like Nick Fuentes or me to even be critical of Charlie Kirk, because it was so acceptable to everyone what he was doing. Art Bell says, JF, last day to fill out the form for the Loblaws bread price fixing suite. For Canadians, $25 to $100 takes a few minutes to fill out. It takes much more money than this to have me reveal my name and address and phone number. Have fun. Have fun if you're not a public person and you want to join this collective lawsuit. But no, I'm not gonna sign a lawsuit with my address and ID identification for $25 to $100. I'm fine. Candace Owens hated Charlie Kirk because it didn't choose her. Tim Pool has a Freudian theory of what's happening with Candace Owens.
Candace Owens hated Charlie Kirk. And I was surprised to hear this, but I received a tip. Several prominent conservatives have confirmed to me and my crew that Candace Owens had been going around shortly before he died, within the months before his death, saying that she hated him. Now, I wonder if she really hated him. Maybe she was just scornful, second wife syndrome. Maybe she actually really loved him, but when he chose Erica over her, she became resentful and angry, sour grapes, trying to find a reason why something was wrong with him. And she chose a different life. I look at everything she's doing now. She's attacking Erica Kirk directly, a grieving widow who has to now deal with a life without a husband and a father for her children. And the question is, why would Candace do this? Why would Candace accuse Turning Point staffers, Charlie Kirk's best friends, of being in on the plot to murder him, or even attack his wife? She really cared about Charlie as much as she claims. She'd want to protect his legacy. She'd want to create a better future, or at least help in whatever way she could, create a better future for Charlie's children than his grieving widow. Instead, she has continually, over 3 months, attacked the organization and told people to stop supporting him. Just destroy.
I think that's absolute nonsense. What the fuck is this theory? That Candace Owens would have wanted to be with Charlie Kirk? I mean, she had probably plenty of choice, of chance to do that. They were together as friends for years and as professional collaborators. Now, I will grant to Tim Pool only one small portion of what he said. It is kind of weird, this non-sexual moment. of Candace Owens and Charlie Kirk, because they were apparently in, you know, on travels together, sometimes in the same hotel room. I don't know if they were sleeping in the same hotel room, but certainly taking some pictures in the same hotel rooms at times. You spend all of that time and you don't inseminate. This is very bizarre to me. This, like, as a practitioner of direct insemination, I don't understand how you would spend an hour with a woman without inseminating. Now, you've been spending like years in hotel rooms. That is bizarre. You have to grant it to Tim, but the rest of the line of thinking is absolutely ridiculous. Second wife syndrome, but she would be scornful and go at Erica after the death of Charlie Kirk. And now, anyway, she's with her husband and she's made like 4, 5, 6 babies or whatever. That doesn't work with me. I think she was just simply putting a lot of value onto Charlie Kirk. It's not about jealousy toward Erica Kirk. It's just that she valued Charlie Kirk as a human being and as a friend. I don't know the amount of sex, but okay, friend. And she lost him. And she wants the truth about it. We all gain from the fact that she wants the truth about it. We all at least have a shot at a pushed and, you know, an intentive, intentional investigation that truly seeks the truth. So we gain from it. Scaring Claring says, well, I do remember Rouge V speculating 6 or 7 years ago on relationship possibility between the two. I mean, it was like, for some of what Candace Owens has revealed in terms of communications between them, I would have killed myself. I mean, it's like, hey, Candace, should I wear this when I'm gonna meet a girl? Oh, no, you should absolutely not wear this. It's like, oh, bro. Charlie Kirk had a female friend with whom he was discussing favorite pop rap music and how to dress for his meetups with actual girls. Oh, bro. The cringe. You actually had a friendship with a female? I want to vomit just thinking about it. But anyways, this was Charlie. This was Charlie Kirk. Joseph Ben says 6'7". What were they saying this also in there? Oh no, Marby Dog. It's Marby Dog who brought the 6'7" meme. No. The 6'7" meme is starting to become illegal in school. Kids cannot say it anymore in elementary school. I think I'm gonna have to ban the 6'7" meme here too. We can't let people say 6'7" like this. 99 No FX says then Candace in a month as a white baby with a bowl cut. Yeah, so Candace, you know, whatever was the relationship, if it was sexual at any point, I don't know. But she seems to have moved on quite effectively. I mean, ending up with apparently a heir to a great fortune of the English industry. E4Y says, Base JF taught me to inseminate within an hour. yes. So finally, as a last item of analysis, this interview between Tucker Carlson and Matt Walsh, they are first describing what seems to be an emerging civil war on the right. And the fact that, yes, Charlie Kirk, I agree with them on this, Charlie Kirk although we may not have fully felt it as he was alive. But now that he's gone, you can truly feel, you can truly realize just how much he was trying to hold everything together. But he was overstretched. And so Nick Fuentes was hanging onto his left arm, and the center-right Zionist conservatives were pulling on his right arm. And now that he's gone, we can see a kind of crystallized expansion of everything, and of Candace Owens taking her own direction in truth seeking, of conspiracy theories rising, of general, I would say, kind of fall of the Zionist network. You know, you have Jordan Peterson in the hospital, you have Ben Shapiro dwindling in popularity. And the right is changing. It's evolving in an interesting direction. You know, most of the developments, I actually personally don't like them. Like, if you ask me, well, is it good that we're headed toward systematic conspiratorialism? No, I'm a man of science. I'm a man for the truth. And honestly, these people annoy me. But at the same time, there are good things about it. It seems that it's going to be more and more costly and harder for Zionists to control the public discourse. Because if I can't handle these conspiracists, if they're that, maybe their irrationality is their layer of protection. You know what I'm saying? Just like being 80 IQ might protect you from the Burt pill, being so irrational that you believe that you can't believe that Tyler Robinson shot Charlie Kirk, maybe that's a form of protection. So you have to grant it. Maybe it's what's needed for the right. Maybe we should have our own kooks. The way the left have their kooks, they don't disavow them. They live with them, and they in fact will make arguments for them. Maybe that's what's needed on the right. I don't know. Walsh kind of falters on Israel, I would say, in that interview. Because it's like, oh, well, I've been very consistent. You can look back 10 years of record. I just don't care about Israel. And it's like, bro, maybe it's time to care. Since you're part of this whole organization that's basically dedicated to push pro-Israeli talking points, since the whole media has been taken over at times of the history of your nation to speak against your people and to fool your people into wars based on lies, maybe it's time to start caring about Israel. But it's like, no, my position is I don't care. Yes, exactly, Forex. Israel cares about you. And that should be a reason to care about them. But it's like, yeah, that at this point, let's call it what it is. It's a cop-out to not engage on the question. Because you have an intellectual obligation. If you're going to be any sort of intellectual leader, to be interested in potentially anything that can change your model of the world. You can't just say, oh, this is not my expertise. I really don't care about it. You have to have some degree of at least an approximation of how things are. Because if you have a blind spot, you're going to miss a lot of stuff. And then we get later in the interview and we see what Matt Walsh is missing. They have a couple of discussions, and one of it is about leftism and relativism. And Matt Walsh says, so he's asked, what is leftism? He says, as far as I'm concerned, leftism is relativism. And I think he's completely wrong on this. I think that relativism is merely a symptom of leftism in certain circumstances for certain leftists. And I don't believe that relativism is a feature even of the left. Relativism is something that you may experience when you try to test someone morally. And you're trying to show them two scenarios and you don't like how they switch position between the two scenarios. And then you say, oh, well, you're a relativist. You're not holding your principles homogeneously across all scenarios. But I would argue you could say this about the right. You could say this about Matt Walsh. In fact, you can say this about anyone. Anyone has some line above which they will be for murder. They won't call it murder, but they will call it self-defense in certain situations. They will call it abortion in others. They will call it acts of war in others. But down the line, everyone has this categorical distinction where they will accept labeling some death as a murder or not, and find some other label. And that is relativism. Like, no, you're not acting on principles. You don't really have a principle of valuing human life. You are allowing certain situations to be read in a certain way where it justifies violating your stated principle. So I don't think that Matt Walsh is particularly enlightened on ethics. I don't think he's particularly consistent, and I don't think he even understands himself. And he kind of gets to the point of acknowledging it in this interview. He's like, oh, you know, I don't know. It was the bombing of Hiroshima a crime? I don't know. There's some people arguing... there are some people arguing we had to do it or there would have been more deaths. So I don't think he's very solid in that part of the interview. And it's important to understand leftism because realizing that leftism is not relativism first allows you to look at yourself and understand no matter how principled you think you are, morality is relative. Relative to whatever function you can make, because ultimately moral nihilism is true. But that's something you won't ever hear from a religion believer. But ultimately moral nihilism is true. And so moral beliefs are arbitrary and yeah, you can have some principles. I'm sure there's going to be a way to test them and to find where they break. It's important to understand this because then you understand that leftism, what is the one thing that guides all of these things that leftists adhere to? It's novelty and it's horizontalism. So they are against the vertical transmission across the generations. And they are for the progressivism, this idea that, well, I'm being raised by my peers rather than by my father. I'm sponging the beliefs of my time. And in fact, I want the next time, I want the point in time in the future to have even more civil rights and even more liberation, whether it's on the face of gender or race or whatever. So leftists ultimately are horizontal beings and conservatives are vertical beings. They believe in authority, parental authority, whereas the leftists, they are raised like a grain of caramel in a sponge cake. They just they are in an absorbing environment all around them, like a creme caramel. Maybe maybe I'm doing too much food book writing these days. But yeah, leftists are like a sponge caramel in terms of texture. They absorb everything around them, and they absorb whatever is the novelty, whatever leads to the next step in the ladder of progressivism forward.
On your parenting style of not leading your children down any specific ideological road, are you flexible with this stance? For example, if one of your kids became particularly enamored with antinatalism, is that the point where you would step in?
Well, I would certainly strongly argue against antinatalism in any of my children. If they were to say, I don't like children or blah, 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 I would try whatever I can to change their mind. But at the same time, I would also acknowledge that maybe if I harass them so much about it, they just will crystallize in their position. So sometimes you have to be clever about persuasion. Sometimes persuasion is just letting that person figure it out for themselves. The way I approach communication with an adult child of mine, let's say my child would be 20-year-old and says, "Dad, I really hate the idea of having children." I would simply state that he should reconsider. But I would also recognize that, hey, there's 20 years ahead where he could have children. I'm not going to try to push him so hard that he develops the brain reflexes to say, no, I'm truly decided. Sometimes by just letting time do its thing, a biological organism is meant to develop and to eventually want children. So in principle, you shouldn't have to do much argumentation. In fact, it barely matters. It barely matters whether you convince your child to have children, because biology operates at a different level than just ideology. You have all these people who are anti-natalist or gay, and they will end up somehow having babies. That's biology doing its thing. Life finds a way. Beet Soup says, "JF, have you researched any Lenten meals for your book? Almond milk as a substitute for milk is found in many medieval recipes." Listen to me, Beet Soup, okay? Look at me in the eyes, because I want you to know something about the book I'm writing. There won't be a trace of fucking almond milk in white people food. Do you understand? This is not hippie food. This is not avoid the cow food. This is white people food. So shut the fuck up with your almond milk replacement. And don't fucking tell me it existed in medieval recipes as a substitute. Fuck your almond milk. So going back to the interview, of Matt Walsh, the big disappointment in this interview is eventually they build up from the grounds of ethics and abortion is wrong and it's killing and MAID is wrong in Canada and it's killing people, and eventually realizing it's killing, in fact, mostly whites. Like, whatever the intent behind the program MAID was in Canada, definitely it is differentially adopted by a bunch of white boomers who are using it to die. And this leads them to acknowledge that, yeah, white people are under attack. They are under attack under so many forms and directions. So a recognition that effectively they are recognizing the white genocide. that is happening. But then it's so important at the end, Tucker is like, so what do we do about this? And all that Matt Walsh has as a response is, I don't know. If I had the solution, I would implement it. I just don't know. And you realize that there's a bunch of people who will be forever victimized because they are willing to stand in front of their victimization and not fix it, not think of the solution. I have a solution. It's not one that they will like. Then it brings us back to a beginning part of the interview where Matt Walsh was saying, you know, podcaster, they can be disconnected from the reality because they don't spend enough time on the ground. They don't go to Walmart. They have too much money, so they go to big restaurants and they don't experience the general diminishment of quality everywhere else where people eat. And I think that part of the reason why Matt Walsh fails at having a solution to the attack on white people is that he too may be living in too much comfort. Because if you're living in such comfort that diversity doesn't yet come to destroy your everyday life, you can stay there. Maybe one more generation, two more generation in somewhat enclosed communities or places that the house prices are just too high for people to afford. So it remains relatively calm. You are in an isolated bubble. But I think you would have thought of solutions if he was more working class. And I'm not saying his history isn't working class, but certainly he's reached a level of wealth that is more comfortable. The solution is reconcentration. There's not going to be any other solution. There's going to be a bunch of white people who will be forever victimized by the anti-white system. They will be diminished, attacked, and some of them will die. And flight toward another area will be the only solution other than being forever victimized. And once politically reconcentrated in a place, which I think for the US might be something like the states around Montana or whatever, and for me in Canada, it's Alberta and Northwest Territory, north of Alberta. And once these places are under enough control, then we can leverage that control to make our conditions of living independent of the attacks against us and eventually secure the future of our children. Why can't we hear this? It seems so simple. But we can't hear this from these people because they are dipping their toes in such a shy way into white identity. In fact, you could see Tucker. It was like, but I don't want to have to think about being white. It's like you're either gonna have to endure this terrible cognitive load of realizing that you're white, or you're gonna be forever hated by everyone living around you. The choice seems easy to me. But these guys can't get to it. They can't get there. Beet Soup says, young people are anti-natalist because they get constant anti-natalist messaging in school and even by their own parents. Absolutely. Which is why homeschooling is a good direction. You know, the Amish are proving that that a lot of the modern aspects of society can be avoided and that a people can survive. I don't say we have to be as restrictive as the Amish, but we certainly have to learn the basics of the Amish lifestyle. Now, let's not cut the internet because I want to continue streaming.